touch on this heart of mine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at the Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line, we'll get you in, 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, all you do is text me. Still to come on the program about an hour from now. Del Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. 11 o'clock hour, my colleague at Breitbart News joins us, Bradley J. We'll talk about, I think the story is sort of how the Trump administration Republicans are handling the Iran war, and the punch counter punches so predictable and uninteresting to me, but we'll talk about it anyway. Joining us now here at the Fairhope Bureau, always a pleasure, my state representative Jennifer Fidler. Representative, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Glad you could make it. You braved the storm here to get here.
That's all good. I've got my water boots on.
Yeah, well, it's snowing not that far north of here.
Is it really?
Like Starkville, a bit central Alabama, it's snowing.
Oh, wow.
There's some flurries about to hit Montgomery, so hell's about to freeze over. But it's
no comment on that.
you need a little squall line coming through on the back end there. These temperatures are dropping, so yeah. it won't stick. But there's pictures of this phenomenon. Well, here we are. We're past the 2/3 way point. It can't get over fast enough for me. But how's a session for you?
It's been fine. I've just not gotten as many things done as I wanted to get done. You know, I've been working on HB 453, which is the breast reconstruction bill, and it can't get it into committee. That's the one where we're trying to provide access for women who have to consider reconstruction if they're a candidate after breast cancer. So I hadn't got any traction on that.
Well, they mobilized in a hurry against that.
There was a lot of questions. There was a lot of support for it. I think it's, if you haven't kind of been through it or walked the walk through with it, with someone, you know, a family member or somebody you know, it's hard to kind of grasp the...
Well, I won't put you on the spot, but I know what's going on, and that rings some alarm bells among our friends in Montgomery in the hallways, but...
Well, women don't have enough access to breast reconstruction options. It's a good, worthy fight to get out there and make sure people are educated about the lack of access for our women, especially in the northern parts of our state. Here, we can just drive on over to New Orleans. We do have a doctor here now in the last couple of years. And then there's one doctor at UAB.
She's got two, right?
One doctor at UAB, and then Dr. Stodler here that's been trying to make sure this access is here for women here locally in our area, which was so grateful. And then he's got a couple other people, Dr. Holmes and Beakley, that are working with him and providing that access for women here. And then the doctor at UAB, that's actually a teaching hospital, so they're teaching that
It's not even
procedure.
Private practice, it's just...
Yeah, right. He needs to make sure that practice microsurgery is taught, and then that's where, you know, he's able to do that at UAB. But other than that, I mean, these ladies that are in our northern edges of the state or on the eastern sides, they just really aren't aware of the option. And then because the doctors they go to don't have this option in their circle of doctors. And unfortunately, you know, we're going to wait. Hopefully we'll get to it next year, but that's another year for them.
Yeah, well, until you brought... how many of us think about this?
Unless you've walked the walk or you've been with someone who's gone down this path and you see it, or you're in the field, your doctor, or you just really don't know.
There's federal law that, you know, backs this up, but the state doesn't do what it should to make sure this federal law or people are aware of it or that these practices are in place.
Exactly. And in this bill would, and that's what it did. It stood up the state law saying, you know, federal law, it needs to be administered to the Women's Health Reconstruction Act of 1998 is what we're talking about, the federal law. And that should be, we can back that up as a state. We should be proud to be able to do that. And I think we will one day. I think education is the key and making sure people understand it's not that complex. It's just trying to make sure women have the access that they so deserve in this anywhere.
So it sounds like another year, I guess, next quadrennium, will you give it another shot?
I will give it another shot. I sure will.
How are you on Public Service Commission, the Senate bill with the seven congressional districts? What are you hearing on that?
I guess when I first heard about it, and I just felt like that we may be, you know, it looks like we're expanding government, and no offense to any of our wonderful senators out there. I think that I wonder, you know, when we really look at the fiscal note on this, what does it say and where are we at on that? Representative Butler has a bill, you know, on the House floor tomorrow, and I'm fully expecting it will pass, which just, you know, it doesn't call for all that. So hopefully we're going to get to some sort of compromise.
So probably these two bills will pass, or one's already passed. This Butler bill will pass, and they'll go to conference committee maybe?
Maybe. But all this is going to, you know, there's no, I don't think there's a fiscal note on Representative Butler's, but theirs definitely will. The Senate's version definitely will. So that's going to affect the budget. The Ways and Means General Fund comes to us next. So that will be something, you know, our chairman and our committee really going to have to look at, because that, you know, depending on when our date is that we put all this into effect. Yeah, it's going to affect the budget.
Well, I don't, you know, and on this issue, the silver unicorn, the thing that everybody's clamoring for, rate hearings. I don't understand why a rate hearing. It's not as if, okay, we're doing rate hearings, your old utility rates are going to go down because we're doing rate hearings. But that seems to be like where a lot of energy is, requiring rate hearings. And maybe I'm missing something here.
It's just there hasn't. Well, they're claiming there hasn't been one since the 80s. I haven't talked to the Public Service Commission to verify any of that, but they're saying that we really hadn't had any, and an analysis of it and making sure things, that is an important thing that's brought to the forefront, should.
It's just a matter of opening up the books and showing this is where we're spending our money, this is where we're, what it's costing us.
Making sure everyone's aware of what
this is. Because they're guaranteed profits, the utilities in this company. I mean, they're guaranteed a certain profit, and that's how they came to their number, I suppose.
Yeah,
because to me, this is all everybody wants to tell me. We need to have rate hearings. And I follow this stuff close. I don't know what I'm missing here. Why?
Right. I would think it's just an analysis of what is going on so you can figure out what can be done to make the prices go
lower. There's no guarantee anything's going to come of that, right?
No, there's no guarantee. But once you become aware of an issue, you can start really analyzing what you can do about it and what the possible solutions are other than that.
The other one, that the closed primaries and that being, and I don't, I, it doesn't sound like it's going far in the Senate, but what did you make of that discussion?
Well, and I've probably feel a little bit differently about this than most people, I think, maybe. I'm concerned about it. Okay, in our area, in our district, most of our folks, we're Republican. We're one of the hardest right, I mean, reddest areas in the whole state. I mean, I've been Republican since day one. I registered to vote after the day after I turned 18. I've been Republican ever since. All that, I mean, we're just red here. We
right.
are. But to say all that, whenever I went door to door and I listened to the people, then after I knocked on those doors, because in the beginning, I was knocking on everyone's door. There were so many that said, I vote for the person. I don't necessarily vote for the party. What are we going to lose? Are we going to lose those people that tell me, that come to the door and say that? Because they're not decided yet, and they're wanting to vote on that person. So those are independents. And then I talked to a colleague. And then in my district, I would tell them, hey, but you have a voice. You do. You have. You can vote. And
well, no one runs in the Democrat primary in Baldwin County, though.
So that's 30-some, but we do have Democrats.
You don't have candidates.
No, well, we did.
Because I look at this, and I hear this, and I see what the party's saying, and if you're a Democrat, you're just going to vote in a Republican primary. You're just going to register to be a Republican. We already can go back in the Secretary of State's website and see if you voted in a Republican or Democrat primary.
And then those people still have a voice.
Yeah.
They're able to vote. Where if we close those primaries, those 30% of the people you're talking about, they're not going to have a voice at all.
Well, then they could vote in a general election. That's the problem there. Vote in a general election. There's your voice. But, I don't know. We're not going to lose sleep over this. But it's like, what really is going to change from this?
I think we'd probably lose. I mean, we got a super majority
right
now.
You want to give Democrats a voice in a Republican primary that would dilute the strength of the Republican ticket by having a more moderate candidate as a Republican nominee.
I think we're going to lose our independence. And in some districts in the state, you may have half the people independent. So where are they going to go?
They'll vote in a general election or sign up to be a Republican. It's a private organization. I know the state pays for their primaries, but if they want to pick their nominees, then so be it. But no one's stopping them from joining the Republican Party if they want to have a voice.
Well, when the way this bill's worded is that you're going to declare what you are in that first election.
Right.
So you just say I declare that, or just say someone declares that they're independent. Because that's a party, and they want to vote that way. The next election, if they don't change that within 60 days, they don't get to vote Republican or, in the primary.
That's too bad. I understand what you're saying, but also looking at it, if you're a Republican, do you want Democrats? How would you feel if you had a liberal candidate running against you? And this district, for whatever reason, Penis Lady and her gang of comrades decide they're going to really pack it into the Republican primary, vote for somebody who's running as a rhino or whatever.
I agree with your, I understand what you're talking about, because at least two of those people, when I went door to door, I met and they looked at me and said, oh, I'm a Democrat and I voted for Roy Moore because I knew if I did that in the Republican primary, that would be the best chance of getting Doug Jones elected. So I absolutely heard that. I just heard more of the people that were independent and said, I vote for the person. And if we close that 60 days ahead of an election, where are they? Able to vote.
I guess the next question would be, well, then we close our primary runoffs. Why wouldn't we? If you're an independent, you would have a voice. Why wouldn't you be able to vote in the primary runoff if you didn't vote in the Republican primary? I mean, that's we sort of have a system of closed runoffs. We have this system for runoffs and the system for primaries, and they're not the same. And it seems like it's an inevitability. It may take a decade or whatever, but that's where the push is going. Florida does it that way. Other states do it that way.
They're close, yeah. I do.
I'm not trying to change your mind here or whatever, but and like I said, I don't know that this really changes much. I still think you have a super majority.
I think we lose. I think that we're going to lose our Republicans. How do we get the people that are in those Democrat areas over to be a Republican? Think about Barber County and Russell County, those areas up there that have historically voted Democrat because that's just
what they do.
But yeah, because that's who, just who that's they it. Are.
I mean, these
historically.
Are anomalies. There's probably five counties: Russell County, Barber County, maybe like a Choctaw County and Pickens County. But these are, I guess Phoenix City's not necessarily rural Alabama, but everything else is. I mean, everything else has already moved that direction.
They're trying to move that way, but if they've not able to pick the candidate of their choice, and they got a tough, election over there right now. But if they're not able to pick, how do we get them moved over? What's the best way?
And if you close the primaries, hypothetical and philosophical, but if you close the primaries, does that incentivize them to move to the Republican Party? Because if you don't, you're just kind of left over here. Do you have anything to vote for?
Well, if they historically were Democrat and then they tried to move over and vote for the person of their choice, they would have to do that early on. 60 days to me seems too far away. Like if we did it, I think it would need to be closer to the date. And
that's hard to do, right?
And I say that because whenever I went door to door, I didn't start going door to door till about 90 days maybe before the primary. So that would only given someone, only the people I reached, about 3 weeks to make up their mind and go ahead and change real quick. I don't know.
I'm
listening. I'm trying to. If you voted in the Republican primary, that's the way you need to vote in the general election. But then
there's all kinds of 3D chess and things like that going on. Let's get a break in here. We got Jennifer Fiddler sitting in with us for a few more minutes. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
What I had, but honey, now I
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. Still to come the next hour, Dale Jackson. Stick around for that. Still with us for just a few more minutes. My state lawmaker, State Representative Jennifer Fiddler, is here. Let's give us a solar farm update. There's companion bills, one moving through the Senate, one moving through the House. What's going on the House end?
There, Representative Simpson, and he had several of us as co-sponsors, filed. There's HB 617 and 618, and I'll just read these off real quick so I make sure I get them right here. This bill would authorize certain county commissions to establish regulations related to the permitting, construction, placement, or operation of solar farms. It would also provide penalties for violations and provide for an appeal process. And then the next one is the bill would prohibit the construction and operation of new solar power facilities for 1 year. So just give time to look at the issue or issues that we have in this county and kind of come up with some authority over those type of adventures.
Well, that's a grassroots kind of thing, the anti-solar farm people.
Well, it just gives a chance to stop and look at it and study it and make sure it's the best thing for the county.
And we got these the data centers become the big boogeyman all of a sudden this year out of nowhere. And then
we've got the data centers, and we've got a bill on the calendar tomorrow regarding data centers and how they're handled and going through the Public Service Commission and those. That's on the agenda tomorrow. And the definition of a mega data center, which is like 150 megawatts, is quite large. Hopefully we can amend that and make those a little bit that smaller. Because when you start doing the research on that, that's quite large.
That's a big, yeah. Huge. And so you could still get your foot in the door with something substantial, but not necessarily be in violation of that limit.
Yeah, you could. And then, what if you had several of those?
You just spread them out kind of 5 miles apart or whatever.
Yeah, so we've got a possible amendment to that. So we'll see how that goes.
Then budgets, how you feel? I know I watched some of the general fund at the Senate. I guess ETF is out.
It's a $10.4 billion budget. We had so much revenue over what our budget was because we cannot increase the budget more than 5.7% from last year constitutionally. Right, and then we have extra money going into the Educational Opportunities Reserve Fund. But it's a, yeah, it's a healthy budget. We should be proud. I think the people should be proud of how much money we're putting back into education, the CHEER Act, the RAISE Act.
Well, Representative, we appreciate you stopping by. I'll probably see you this week, but we'll do it again in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it, Jeff. Thank you.
State Representative Jennifer Fidler. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Mr. T.